Welcome to episode 12 of Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. How's it, Candace?
Hey, Duncan. Good weekend?
Yeah, pretty good. Recording on a Monday morning for a change. We usually do this on a Friday afternoon, but last week was just so busy, we just didn't get around to it before the week ended. So Monday morning. Of course, the news last week was all about Telkom and all about their new mobile product, Ayta.
Yes, it was.
Which we named before the launch.
Lucky us, we got it right.
Yes. So, big launch last Thursday night at a hangar at Lanseria Airport. No expense spared in this launch, and a who's who of the industry at the event. And they unveiled Ayta. What did you think of the branding, Candace?
Well, I think it's quite impressive. A little bit similar to T-Mobile, but the pink and black and grey, it looks really good. It looks very striking and very young, which is something that the head of the business, Amit Harash, decided would be a good plan. So it looks exciting.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I think they've done some good work on that, on the actual logo. It's striking. It's a name you'll remember. And I think the Ayta branding ahead of the Ayta launch was fairly effective, and it's gotten people talking.
Definitely. Well, I read a cool tweet this weekend, a short conversation from mobile operators. Heta, Yoba, Yebo, Noah.
I think it was Gus Silver on Twitter, yeah.
He's quite fun. So
he is quite good, yeah.
The branding has been sort of really fit, it's slotted into some of the other branding that the other mobiles are using, and it might get lost, it might be... a little bit.
Me too.
But we'll see. Mm. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean it's a short, sharp, punchy name. The other alternative, according to Amit Maharaj, was to call it Mwah or Mwah, which I think would have been a mistake.
The SMS speak for kisses, but yes. I agree. I think that would have been a mistake. A little bit obscure.
Absolutely, Ayta is easy to remember, and it's South African slang that everyone knows. So I think they've come up with a good name, and the branding is well designed. So kudos to the ad agency who was behind that.
I like the cartoony feel of it, and I like the little guys that they're using, the cartoon characters that they're using to promote the brand. I think it's very cute and very fresh.
Yeah. Interestingly, they managed to get the Ayta.com domain name. It's obviously very, very difficult to get 2, 3, or even 4-letter .com domain names these days. They apparently had to buy it from someone in Japan. Because Ayta or Heta in Japan is an anime character apparently, so they had to buy it from someone in Japan. But apparently they only paid a few thousand dollars for it, so they got away fairly lightly, I think.
Quite lucky, yes, definitely. Yeah. Specifically because the Japanese character is quite popular.
Yes.
So
yes.
Luckily they got it.
Yes.
That's why if you search for Ayta on Twitter, you will see that actual 8TA. Has been taken, and you won't be able to read it because it's in Japanese.
Yeah, so they've gone with Ayta, Ayta-da as their Twitter handle. So we had a very successful evening, actually. We ran our first live blog at the Ayta launch and had a huge response, huge amount of traffic, well, very well read, and generally very positive feedback from the event. Of course, modeling it on similar sort of live blogs that are run by websites like Engadget, etc. in the US, around events like Steve Jobs keynotes, etc. It's not often we have a big event in the ICT space that justifies a live reporting event like that, but I think this went off very well, and Candace, I think we'll do it again at the next big one.
Definitely. I certainly had fun running around snapping photos of the who's who that were at this event, and really it was a fantastic evening. Just seeing the responses come in as we do, as we upload stuff, and even watching the executives at the event reading the live blog.
On their phones, yeah, that was great fun, actually. Wandering around, William Stuckey, the councillor at ICASA, was quite keen on what we were doing, and then Pinky Moholi, the managing director of Telkom South Africa, whose evening this really was. We're sitting at a table with sitting next to Carol Pinar, of managing director at MTN, sitting there on her phone reading our live blow-by-blow accounts on Tech Central, which was actually quite cool.
It was, since you'd think they wouldn't need to since they were at the event.
Well, I guess they want to see what we're thinking of the event as it unfolds.
Everyone that walked past our table was calling it the Tech Central live blogging booth.
Yeah, that was Simon Dingle, in fact, from the ZA Tech Show, who came up with that chip. But it was good fun. The only disadvantage I found of it is that I had to sit in front of my MacBook at the table the whole time and didn't really have a chance to wander around and go and chat to people, which has its disadvantages as well. But I think it worked really well. Candice, you had great fun wandering around taking pictures of all the executives, although you did get chased away by the communications minister, didn't you?
Well, yeah, his entourage behind him told me to stop taking photos.
But you got a good, you got a couple of good snaps and a really great photo, if you haven't seen it yet, of Pinky Moholy of Telkom and Coral Pinar of MTN hugging each other at the launch event. So.
Well, it was actually quite a fun shot because Coral Pinar was commenting on the photo as well, saying, "Please don't steal our customers." It was a great shot and a great evening.
Good stuff. Well, the big question, of course, is whether they're going to be successful or not in the market. And I think the devil's in the detail, as it were. The pricing seems to have been generally welcomed by consumers based on the feedback that we've seen on Tech Central and elsewhere, particularly around their mobile to fixed line rates, which have dramatically undercut the other operators. We're talking about 65 cents per minute to fixed lines, whereas the other operators are at least twice that for fixed line calls, mobile to fixed calls.
Absolutely. A very interesting twist in the tale. And I also think their out-of-bundle data rates are quite interesting.
Oh, yeah, one rand a megabyte, which is half of what the other operators charge.
Which is great, but what I really think is going to hit home specifically for the market that they're looking at is the 2.50 outside international calls. I think that is going to really hit home for a lot of people, a lot cheaper than everybody else, and also
for mobiles. Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I went onto the ATA website over the weekend and I downloaded a list of their international call rates, and the 2.50 certainly does not apply to all markets.
No, of course not. But there's definitely the major markets, which we're looking at locals, Nigeria, Zimbabwe, and the like. So those are very important ones.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But don't expect if you're going to get an ATA account that you can go and dial out of Mongolia for 2.50 a minute. You're going in for a bull shock if you do that.
Well, definitely. But a lot of those rates apply to the other operators that are receiving the calls and are not really up to Telkom. So, but the important ones have been stabilized, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But you have a gripe with them at the moment.
Well, I've just got one problem, and they didn't really emphasize this at the launch, and I think they should have done so more clearly, is the fact that the 1.50 to other mobiles and 65 cents per minute to fixed line is per minute data billing. It's not per second data billing that is offered on the rivals MTN and Vodacom. So if you make a 1 second call, or your calls cut off, a lot of calls tend to be 10, 15 seconds, just, "Hi honey, I'm on my way home, bye." You're going to be charged a full minute for that rather than charged a proportionate amount for the number of seconds that you've used. And that actually has the effect of pushing up the rate fairly substantially, I think around about a third. So it's actually quite, you can't do a direct comparison between MTN and Vodacom and Telkom rates because of the fact that they're charging per minute. And I think they need to be a little clearer about this because I think there is an expectation in the market now that the rate should be per second. I know that Cell C is also guilty of this charging per minute rates, also 1.50 for cell-to-cell calls. I do think the industry needs to be more clear on this, and I think maybe there's even a role for ICASA to get involved here to look at this from a consumer protection point of view. I don't think there's any real reason why operators shouldn't be charging per second billing from the first second across all networks, across all calls. And I think that Telkom either needs to make it very clear that this is per minute, not per second billing, first of all. And secondly, I actually think that both Telkom and Cell C should fall in line with what the rest of the industry is doing, namely MTN and Vodacom, and offering per second billing from the first second.
Well, fair enough, but we also have to take into account the target market that these guys are looking at. And, a lot of these 10-second calls that we would phone and say, "Hi, honey, I'm on my way home from work," would be an SMS from the target market that they're looking at. So, yes, I agree that it's a little bit ambiguous to not put more emphasis on the fact that it's not second billing. But at the same time, I don't think that the target that they're looking at will actually have a problem with that. They'll either take the 5 rand call or they will use an SMS.
Yeah, and the SMS rate's pretty good. It's actually the standard rate of 50 cents, which is pretty much what they're in line with what the other operators charge. But if you send 5 SMSs during a day, in other words, spend 2.50, you'll get another 50 SMSs free of charge for use on that day. So for 2.50, effectively, you get 55 SMSs, which I think will appeal to particularly to the youngsters. I guess this is for those youngsters who haven't quite figured out how to install Mixit yet.
I've heard discussions around how it's going to blow Mixit out the water, but that's not true.
No.
I mean, you're looking at about two cents for a Mixit message.
Mm.
And really, they've brought a lot of value to that space, and you know, it's a good market for them. But it is a good attack at it. I spoke to an analyst last week who said that actually Telkom could have been more aggressive with their SMS rate.
Yeah, I mean, I think a number of analysts have made the point that SMS has just been pure profit for the operators, that it costs, if not fractions of a cent, then very little more than a cent to send an SMS across their network. So that's just pure profit margin.
Well, 50 cents, the 50 free SMSs, that gives you an indication of exactly how cheap it is.
Yes, and I'm sure Telkom is still making a profit on that, even if you use that full allocation every day, which people won't, of course, on average. So it's about time SMS prices came down. Or to be honest, I mean, you know, with services like Mixit and instant messaging on your phone, something has to give.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other disappointing thing for me is that they didn't, and I suppose they were doing this because they didn't want to cause too much confusion around pricing options, etc. at launch. But they're only going to be launching their postpaid products, which I'm actually more interested personally. In early November, they haven't announced their postpaid offerings yet, but I'm sure they'll be competitive to the other operators. And they're talking, apparently going to be bringing in, well, they're in talks with Apple to bring in the iPhone 4, and I'm sure there'll be other high-end handsets that they're going to bring into market. So a couple more weeks of wait, and we'll know what their plans are in the postpaid market. Hopefully they're a little more aggressive on the data pricing side than they have been on prepaid.
Well, I think that their plan and the marketing strategy around this the postpaid side has been actually very clever. What will happen now is that in November they will launch the postpaid product, and I'm sure they'll do it with as much pomp and circumstance that they did the prepaid stuff. What will happen then is at the end of December, a whole bunch of people will be cut off the other networks because of Rika, and they can then push those products as an alternative for those people who've been cut off the networks.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the people are going to be cut off. I would imagine are sort of low end prepaid rather than.
It's very possible.
Because contract customers don't really want, I mean, they are the guys who are going to Rika because they're the guys who don't want to run the risk of losing their cell phone number.
Well, the thing is I got my cell phone a year ago, just before Rika. I'm not even sure if I've Rika'd or not. So, you know, when I sign my contract, I assume that I've been Rika'd and this is all fine. I don't actually know whether or not that's true. So come December the 31st, if I get cut off, there is also an option.
Yes.
I don't think people who've got two-year contracts actually specifically sit down and think, oh, well, you know, I'd better go and Rika, because you've already given them your home details. You've already given them all the information about your bank, your banking credit and all of that. So,
mm.
You know, how many people are actually going to do it?
Mm. You know, anyway, let's look out for the rest. It'll be in a couple of weeks from now. Anyway, Candice, I think let's move on from ATA and Telkom and talk a little bit about Cell C. Extraordinary advertisement which appeared in the City Press newspaper and I think some other Sunday newspapers over the weekend. Lars Reifeldt, the CEO, has effectively apologized for what he called confusion or any confusion that might have occurred around their 4G/4GS network branding. Of course, as you know, the Advertising Standards Authority sided with Vodacom and MTN in their complaints that the 4G and 4GS terminology was confusing to consumers and that perhaps it suggested that Cell C was operating a fourth generation mobile network. Well, what did you make of Lars's apology?
It's a hard pressed decision comment to make because it feels a little bit like a desperate ploy, sort of, you know, a last minute. Oh well, we better just backtrack on this thing. And I'm not sure exactly what Cell C was thinking when they did this.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back at it, they wanted to create the impression that they had a fourth generation mobile network. And there are operators elsewhere in the world, such as Clearwire in the US, that claim to have 4G services. Technically, there's no such thing as a fourth generation mobile network in commercial deployment yet because it involves an all internet protocol based network with a 1 gigabit per second connection when you're stationary or 100 megabits per second if you're moving on a train or on a bus, for example. And clearly none of the networks that have been deployed in South Africa are anywhere near that definition of the word. But it was very clear that they wanted to create some sort of differentiation in the market and differentiation for their network, to say that their network is better than the alternatives that are available in the market at the moment, which it is. But calling it 4G was perhaps being a little disingenuous, even though some other operators elsewhere in the world have done so. But we've kind of seen a bit of backtracking on this whole thing with now the claim that it doesn't stand for fourth generation, but it stands for great service and for great speed. And then they tagged on the little tiny little S next to the 4G logo. It was kind of, I don't know, kind of backtracking for me. My view on the situation is perhaps Cell C shouldn't have called their network 4GS at all, but should have come up with something else entirely when they realized the 4G issue was going to be a big issue like this. And then when the ASA ruled against them, they kind of then said, okay, well, we're going to take on these, we're going to take on these corporate bullies in MTN and Vodacom who threatening brutalized Cell C. And then now they seem to have backtracked on that and said, well, you know, we apologize and we're not going to continue using this 4GS logo. In fact, if you go onto the Cell C website, you'll see the 4GS slogan has been crossed out and they're asking their customers to help them come up with a new name. So kind of, I get the impression there's been a bit of flip-flopping going on here. It's a bit disappointing because Cell C is doing a really, really, really good job in rolling out its next generation network, its new wireless broadband network, and it's got distinct advantages over the other operators, particularly rolling out at 900 megahertz. I think they need to be a little more careful in how they the messages they bring to the market, and perhaps be a little more careful in making sure they don't contradict themselves.
I'm not so sure that this isn't actually engineered. Any publicity is good publicity. And for Cell C, even this backtracking on 4GS is not a bad thing. Now they can get the customer involved in the actual branding process, which is what I thought they would do in the first place. But getting the customer involved in naming or giving the new branding some identity is a good thing. So I'm not so sure the entire thing hasn't been engineered. I think that there is some sort of process that they've thought about. They knew that this would be challenged. They must have known that this would be challenged.
Like the copyright symbol in their logo.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's an interesting speculation. My view of it is that they wanted to differentiate themselves as this 4G thing, and they didn't. I don't think they realized the impact that it would have. I think the Cell C copyright symbol logo, I think they would have thought that one through a little more carefully and had some anticipation of what was going to happen in terms of trying to register that as a trademark. But I think the 4G, my personal view is the 4G and 4GS thing was perhaps not carefully thought out as they perhaps should have.
What it has done is it has differentiated them as the fastest network in South Africa.
That's true.
And maybe it's done its job. Maybe they don't need it anymore.
Maybe, yeah. It'll be interesting to see what new name they come up with.
Well, it will be, actually. We shall see, though.
Mm. Maybe they should call it 5G.
No confusion there.
Anyway. Let's move on to the other big news which came out last week was more follow-ups on the interview I had with the chairman of Sentech, Koresh Patel, and his subsequent presentation last Wednesday to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Communications, ongoing developments on that front. And one of the most interesting stories to come out of that was the whole issue around a company called Screamer Telecoms, which has been using, apparently unlawfully, been using a portion of Sentech's allocation of spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz frequency band to provide wireless broadband services using WiMAX technology.
Well, it was an interesting story. It's long been the worst-kept secret in industry, and, they've apparently, according to the chairman of Sentech, the contract was canned in January, and Screamer is still advertising a WiMAX network to customers, but nobody actually knows what spectrum they're using. Unfortunately, they have not come back to my queries yet. They'd like to have a listen to the transcripts that were published from the hearing last week. So hopefully, once they've had a listen to the accusations made in Parliament, they can come back to us and let us know exactly what spectrum they're using to run their WiMAX network.
Yeah, the whole thing sounds a bit dodgy about how they got the spectrum in the first place and why Centec, which isn't allowed to trade its spectrum, actually allowed it to use this chunk of spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz band. And perhaps there needs to be some sort of more detailed investigation into how this happened. And, I think that there's very clearly something. I'm not going to suggest necessarily that there was corruption involved here, but I think it does bear investigation as to exactly how this company got access or was allowed to use Centec's spectrum in the first place.
Well, as you know, Duncan, it is something that we are investigating and will update our readers and listeners as soon as that comes through.
And Koresh Patel, the chairman of Centec, has said in the meantime, was instructed or told the Asticasa, or not instructed, but rather Asticasa, to act against Screamer if... it's found that Screamer is using Centec's spectrum at all to provide services. So I don't think the story is over yet.
No, definitely not. I mean, currently the only two companies licensed to have access to the 2.6 gigahertz range is WBS, iBurst's parent company, and Centec.
Mm-hmm. Of course, whether Centec should be sitting on this fallow spectrum at all, I mean, it's not using it in the slightest. Is another question altogether. I personally believe that they should be handing it back to ICASA, so that ICASA can provide it to commercial operators that want to actually deploy networks.
Well, your story last week indicated that they are planning to roll out their own WiMAX network.
Yeah, well, let's hope they don't. given the history of Centec and wireless broadband, I don't believe that that is a wise move at all.
Well, we shall see how that plays out. But one interesting thing that we picked up last week was that the new spectrum regulations published by ICASA actually start moving towards allowing Centec to reform or at least rent out the spectrum that they have, which is what we call spectrum trading. If those regulations come into effect, then spectrum, the Centec will be allowed to trade that spectrum, which is an interesting move by ICASA. And for what purpose, we'll be looking into that as well. So.
Yeah. But the use it or lose it policies also form part of those regulations, don't they?
Yes, to an extent, but no, to another extent. So it's all very ambiguous at the moment. What we need to do is to have the spectrum auction in 2.6 and 3.5, and look at the license conditions that ICASA attaches to those, and again to the invitation to apply. So
Well, I think we need a decision around the Centec, this whole Centec broadband network issue before that spectrum auction even happens.
Agreed.
Because if Centec isn't going to use the spectrum, and they've got a huge allocation of spectrum, 50 megahertz, which is far more than any network operator actually needs to build a network.
Absolutely,
I
15.
Mean, 30 megahertz is generally considered the desirable amount in the 2.6 gigahertz band to build a WiMAX network. If they're not going to do, at the very least, they need to hand back a portion of that spectrum before the auction takes place. But preferably, they need to hand back the entire chunk of spectrum. And if they want to access it, then maybe they should bid for it again in a competitive bidding process rather than getting it from their political masters in the Department of Communications, which is what happened, which is how they got that spectrum in the first place. It was simply allotted to them. If they want to provide a broadband network, perhaps they need to participate in a spectrum auction freely and transparently with everyone else.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. They need to step up now, and actually ICASA needs to step up and take responsibility for that spectrum, because they're responsible for managing it. And someone with deep pockets can roll out a network. Centec is not it.
Well, so I guess Centec has the pockets are only as deep as the public purse, but
which is the concern,
absolutely. Although Centec has promised that it's not going to go to government with a begging bowl looking for more money, but
like it hasn't done every other year for the last 5 years.
Indeed. Anyway, I think let's take a quick break there, Candice. We'll be back right after this break.
Welcome aboard Voxair Teleconferencing, where you can enjoy first-class service at a fraction of the cost, without the wait or the jet lag. Just an automated, hassle-free way to connect with people wherever they are, and all the legroom you need. It's like being there without the hassle of getting there. So why travel for business when you can simply teleconference? Call 01-0001-0001 or visit voxair.co.za. Voxair Teleconferencing from Vox.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. Candice, you've been looking at the DOC's annual report filing to Parliament in the last week, and not so great news there. Tell us about that.
Well, at least one of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee members made a flying statement at the DOC saying that it's a disaster and it's imploding. For the first time in 5 years, the department has recorded a
qualified
audit, which is, it's incredible. 24 million in irregular expenditure from 4 million last year. The DOC says, or at least its acting DG, Harold Wesso, says that that it wasn't actually that this current administration's missing money. It was from 2006. But this is something that the Auditor General hasn't picked up since 2006.
I was just about to say, how can the Auditor General and the I mean, who's responsible for auditing the accounts, the books of the Department of Communications, miss out on irregular expenditure of a period of 5 years? Week after week after week of reports about problems in this department and problems in state-owned enterprises that fall within the mandate of the portfolio of the Department of Ministry of Communications. It appears that things are not being sorted out, and that there seems to be more political infighting than anything else going on.
It baffles
mismanagement.
The brain.
It's mismanagement. It's basic mismanagement, and it's worrying because this really is a key sector, and we need clarity. And Inyanda is not providing it right now. Let's hope that changes.
With any luck.
Mm. And of course, the Inyanda Mokhlala, Mamadupi Mokhlala, the ex director general saga is ongoing. This time, a report in the Sunday Independent newspaper suggesting that Mokhlala reported various tender irregularities to the SA police a day before she was axed. Inyanda yesterday angrily. Not denying, but angrily coming and speaking out against Mokhlala and the Sunday Independent article. But more questions than answers at the moment in terms of some of these tenders. For example, a 5 million rand tender for apparent advice on STBs, set-top boxes. Does the government really need to spend 5 million rand just to get advice on set-top box technology standards? Surely the industry could provide that free of charge.
Well, there's also the 20 million rand a year for a campaign around the digital migration, an advertising campaign. 20 million a year for 5 years.
That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money, and I would assume that not the mobile operators, the broadcasters, would be running their own campaigns anyway around digital migration and letting consumers know what needs to happen. So. Anyway, let's watch the space. If Mokhlala has indeed reported these matters to the police, then there will be an investigation, so let's see what happens.
Allegedly, there is a docket, but police aren't apparently talking about it, so we'll see.
And then, just lastly, for this week's show, the DTT standards-related story, digital terrestrial television, and all the controversy around whether South Africa is going to stick to its... plans to adopt the European standard for digital terrestrial television or adopt the Brazilian standard or some other standard. That issue, which has been investigated by a Southern African Development Community task team, was meant to report back last month on its recommendations for the way forward. That will now happen in November. So we're about a month away from knowing which direction the SADC region is going to take. My sources say that there is still ongoing disagreement between various countries in SADC about which standard should be adopted. So there doesn't seem to be any clarity on that front yet, but they have been mandated to put forward their recommendation to the SADC ministers at a meeting in November. So we should finally have some clarity on that, and then hopefully we can start to move ahead again with digital migration.
Be good to have digital TV. I hope it happens soon.
Yeah, I'm less interested in the move to digital terrestrial television than the impact moving to it will have on freeing up of scarce radio frequency spectrum for providing the next generation of wireless broadband networks based on long-term evolution and the spectrum specifically around the 700-800 megahertz band, which is ideally suited for providing those sort of wireless broadband solutions. That's the real benefit for me of the move to DTT.
Absolutely.
Good. Candace, I think let's call it there. Hopefully we'll be back to our normal recording schedule this week on Friday. If you have any feedback on the show, you're most welcome to email info@techcentral.co.za. Thanks again for listening, and we'll chat to you soon. Bye-bye.